This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is Joy 94.9's Family Matters podcast, your light-hearted look at parenthood and rainbow families, sponsored by Berry Street. Did you know that Berry Street seeks members of our LGBTI communities to become foster carers? Not only do they have a proud tradition of training and embracing LGBTIQ carers, they officially support marriage equality. Learn more now at berrystreet.org.au, a proud Joy sponsor for over 5 years.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Nichols Family Lawyers. Family law advice for the LGBTI community you can trust. We have expertise in all areas of law relating to rainbow families, including surrogacy, sperm and egg donation agreements, adoption, co-parenting arrangements, and arrangements for children after separation. Mention Joy and receive a free 30-minute consultation. Find out more and get in touch at nicholslaw.com.au. Nichols Family Lawyers are a proud Joy sponsor.
You gotta see the baby. When are you gonna see the baby?
Family Matters.
You are listening to Family Matters on Joy 94.9. It's Beck and Gina. We're the naughty kids left here tonight.
Can I say the only healthy kids probably too?
I know, between Michelle's bloody lung or whatever it is and Dave's wisdom tooth, which quite frankly I've heard enough about to last a lifetime. We're lucky we're
the last standing.
I have my flu injection today just so that this show can keep going, Gina.
Thank you.
These are the things I do for this team.
You take it for the team and that's why I love you.
I want this on the formal record.
And I have a feeling Adrian's probably rubbing some deep heat onto some muscles because he started Auskick with the kids.
I know.
And no doubt we'll have to be kicking things.
Oh, Adrian.
He's probably done a groin.
He has. And that other voice, because Gina and I can't be trusted, we've got Steph here from Stand Up Straight just to keep an eye on us for the start of the show because we need a mum here.
The grown up.
Yeah. Just in case because Gina and I are liable to go rogue at any minute.
And we've even brought in a professional who'll be on air with us soon. We've got an IVF counsellor coming in tonight to talk to us about because apparently counselling is compulsory. You have to actually, before they can put the thing in the thing.
Wow.
You've got to sit in a room and talk about your feelings.
Or the not the thing in the thing and the other thing in
the other
thing. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's going to be fascinating. And I've got so many questions about the process and, you know, what people talk about and those sorts of things. But spoilers, next week we're doing a law show. So I'm going to be here and I might invite my boss to come in because that gets me some good points. But I know what people come to see us about at work, but I really want to know if there's anything that people that are listening have a question about, something to do with, rainbow families and the law or family law generally. It doesn't necessarily have to be rainbow related. Mm. Please send us a message on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, email, whatever, because I'd love for us to be able to talk about things that are important to you.
And if you even want to, if you've got an idea right now and you want to message in and join the conversation and get Beck thinking while she's still well and healthy,
that's message right, before the flu,
before the flu show kicks in, message in on 0427 Joy 949 or you can email us on air at joy.org.au. And like Beck said, we've got a Twitter account, which is Family Matters 94. You can get us on Facebook at Family Matters on Joy. You can get us on Instagram. You can get us anywhere.
And the other thing is that my wonderful law firm, Nichols Family Lawyers, we actually sponsor Family Matters.
Yay.
And anyone who comes and makes an appointment to come and see me, aside from getting wonderful legal advice, will get a half an hour of that for free if you mention Joy. So that's something we're really happy to offer to people. Yeah.
And that's
and
that's,
that is huge.
That's
let me
huge.
Tell you, I've been through a divorce. I know how huge that is.
So, yes, if you do want to join the conversation or if you've got a question while you were thinking, we're going to get you warmed up with this little gorgeous track. I love this track. I love to go off on this track.
Oh yes, please.
Gina.
I'm going to go off now.
Family Matters, brought to you by Joy sponsor, Nichols Family Lawyers. Family law advice for the LGBTI community you can trust. NicholsLaw.com.au.
You're listening to Family Matters on Joy 94.9 with Beck, Gina, and our supervisor, Steph.
Yes.
Have we behaved
so far? Just for the
next
few minutes, yes, you're behaving beautifully.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Give yourself a pat on the back.
Aww.
I love Steph.
Yeah, I know. You can stay. We're going to get rid of Dave and keep you.
Yeah.
Now, Gina, sorry, that just sounded like a master plan that I just came up with. An evil plan. As I was saying just before the break, next week, legal show, any questions? And I suspect there might be things that come out of our conversation today that people go,
didn't think of that.
Maybe I should go and see Nicholls Family Lawyers about that.
Maybe I should get a contract that says that.
That's right. So
possibly.
We can, people can come in and talk to me about all those things.
Now, that song and the topic next week got me thinking about kind of our history and the sort of, where are we at now? Because we saw over the last couple of days there was, you know, the kind of that hideous thing about, what was it, the gay attack defence or the panic defence.
Yeah.
And SBS Sexuality recently, I think in the last couple of days, released what they called the definitive timeline of LGBT rights in Australia. It's not definitive. It's very good. Well done, you guys. But it's not the definitive rights. But looking through it, a lot of the last decade has really been the stuff that's impacted, well, positively, is going in the right direction for LGBT and rainbow families. So the list starts in 1533 when Britain passes the Buggery Act, outlawing particular sex and bestiality. And then it goes to 1788 when, of course, the British colonised Australia and imported not only probably cats and a few other things, but they imported their anti-homosexual laws.
Probably could have thrown them off the boat.
They
on
could
the way
have.
Over,
they could have kind of, you know, stayed over there. But then the list kind of goes through and, you know, when it comes to looking at the law and rainbow families, there's definitely some things in the last, what, decade or so.
But even things that really shocked me, like it was only 1981 when Victoria decriminalised male acts of homosexuality.
Yeah.
That blows my mind. Mm. That's when I was born.
Yeah.
Because I'm 21. But, you know, I would have thought it was, you know, far earlier than that. And it was really surprising to me to learn about the things that have happened quite recently.
Well, that's the thing. 1997 was the first time the gay panic defence is actually held up in the High Court of Australia, and that's the stuff that hasn't even moved across all states. But with the family stuff, it's kind of looking at the years that even adoption, I mean, we know in Victoria adoption was only made legal, what was it, end of last year?
Mm.
But it's not across all states.
The ACT started in 2004. They
2004.
Were the trailblazers.
I mean, we know in 2007 was the first time lesbians in Victoria didn't have to pack a lunch and go to Albury to access IVF. So that's, so many of these things are still so recent.
Yeah, but I think the other thing is Victoria's so progressive. I mean, I think compared to the other states, we've had some really great things happen here.
And
we're pretty lucky.
South Australia just the other day have now, they don't have to pack a lunch and travel to Victoria. They can access IVF without being medically infertile in their state. I mean, we still welcome them to come and hang out, MQFFs on.
Yeah,
feel free, South Australian family members.
Welcome.
We'll have you anytime.
That's right.
I highly recommend people check out the list. I might actually throw it on the Facebook account. It's not the most definitive list. The Australian Lesbian Gay Archives do a lot of great work in this space. I mean, it wasn't even that long ago that it was actually a criminal offence to self-inseminate as well as a lesbian couple.
What prompted the SBS to put together this timeline?
I'd love to know.
Yeah, I'd love to know too, because they've obviously put a bit of, you know, research and work into it.
Yeah, there's been a good wiki Google search that's gone on in order to get this. But, Steph, this is why everyone's kind of, the marriage equality debate is still alive and well.
Yeah.
The gay panic defence clearly has kind of spurred up a lot of the sort of stuff over history and how long it takes us to get here. But the work you do is so important, Steph. And for myself, I've always said marriage equality, great. I personally not interested in getting married. I care more about death equality. And your work is fascinating.
Yes. And my work is hopefully going to be made even more fascinating. There is an act that's in Parliament at the moment that will come on the back of the Advance Wishes Act that was legislated in November last year for funeral and burial instructions. So in the near future, funeral and burial instructions will hopefully in Victoria be part of your will, so families will have to follow those instructions.
That's fabulous.
And you know, from my experience, death doesn't discriminate, which is kind of interesting because, you know, in life we do, but with death we don't seem to. But there have been a number of cases where families' wishes weren't, an individual's wishes weren't met by their families, and so this has sparked discussion and hopefully changing of the law.
And is that something that you've seen a lot, Steph, at funerals that you've performed, that families, you know, that whether there's been a gay person who wasn't out to their family or their family didn't accept it, that it's been an issue, or do people kind of get over this stuff when someone dies?
Yeah, I think people get it. From my experience, people get over it. I mean, I've heard stories contrary to that, but really, and people don't, I don't, from my experience, people don't label people as much when once they're dead. You know, like I've heard of lesbian, you know, aunties who, you know, they might say something like, oh, well, she had a special friend for 40 years. Yeah. But they won't say, oh, you know, she was my lesbian auntie. And so you kind of read between the lines, and everyone's very respectful, and especially of a generation where people are in their 90s. Mm. And, you know, these women weren't out or these men weren't out, and, you know, you have to honour that. And there have been a couple of cases where I've been asked to lead funeral services where men have been, one particular man, he remained in the closet to his family forever. And when I led his funeral service, it was very important that that didn't come out.
Oh, wow.
And his friends, and I, look, I went to his home to meet his family, and all I needed to do was to look at his DVD collection. Because, you know, the family said to me, oh, he was so, you know, never married,
yeah,
lived in Hawthorne with his dear friend John, who left him the house when John died, you know, 15 years prior, and worked at Fletcher Jones for 30 years. And
had gorgeous arrived ties and cravats.
Yeah, and be always so well, and such a ladies' man, charmed the ladies, you know, they all loved him. And I'm just going, yep, tick, tick, tick. But, you know, the family, you know, telling me all of this information about their brother. Mm. And then, you know, we were talking about music, and they said, oh, we don't know what kind of music he liked. He left Australia to go and live in London for 7 years when he was a 19-year-old. I'm like, okay. So I looked at his DVDs. They're all, you know, musicals. I'm just like, yes, this man is so gay. So then I ended up ringing a couple of his friends, and they said, look, he's gay. He was never out to his family. It's really important. So we built this funeral service around him and his life, and we managed to incorporate his great music and, you know, some wonderful readings from Noel Coward and some very camp things while respecting his need. So, you know, there's ways and ways.
God bless you, Steph.
Mm. Yeah.
Another reason why I love Steph. How cool that is. Seriously.
That's right.
The kids are all right. As for our presenters, Family Matters, Joy 94.9.
You're on Family Matters, your favourite rainbow family show here at Joy 94.9. Becca, I'm excited. We've got a very special guest.
We do.
We've got the lovely Marianne. Marianne is a counselling services manager from Melbourne IVF who's come here to join us to talk about something a lot of our guests have touched on but not always been sure what it was about.
Mm.
And a lot of our kind of audience have asked us questions on. So, Marianne, welcome to Family Matters.
Thank you.
And firstly, do you want to just tell us a little bit about what you do as a counselling manager at Melbourne IVF?
I've worked at Melbourne IVF for over 8 years now and been a counsellor for over 25 years. And I manage the counselling team. There's 17 of us.
Oh, wow.
And we provide counselling services to all Melbourne IVF patients. So there's mandatory counselling that everybody has to have, and then we also provide supportive counselling too.
Tell me, Marianne, because I like logistics.
Yeah.
How does it work? So someone comes to Melbourne IVF because they need to access a service, I guess for a whole range of reasons, whether that's infertility or lesbians with
just lesbian.
With sperm donors, all those sorts of things. How does the process work, and when in the process does the counselling kick in?
Okay, so that can depend. Sometimes they will go and see a doctor first and talk about what they want, what their options are, and then when they're ready to start, the doctor will refer them into Melbourne IVF, and then there's a whole process that starts that includes nursing, counselling, working with our donor team to prepare for donation if that's what they're doing, or surrogacy, or just straight IVF if that's what they're doing. Or sometimes people will contact the counselling service or our donor service directly, and say, look, we're not sure whether we want to do this. We're not sure which way we want to go. Can we have a conversation first?
Okay.
So we'll get them in for that. And then when they're ready, they'll then link in with the doctor and then come back in when they've gone through all their tests and those sorts of things.
And is the counselling a one-off or is it something that continues along the process?
Mm. So there is legislated counselling that patients have to do before they can commence treatment.
Can I ask, while you're touching on that, a question I've had is it just the gays that need to have the counselling or is it anyone who comes through this service?
Everybody who has who does IVF,
yep.
regardless of what it is, or IUI,
yep.
Who stores their eggs, mm-hmm. has to have counselling before they can start treatment.
So that's the legislative requirement.
It is, yes.
Okay, cool. And sorry, Beck, I interrupted that, but because that's a really common one I get. People feel like, oh, is it just us? Because
yeah.
the police checks that you need to do and the counselling as well. So it is compulsory. And I think you were asking how many
is it? Yeah, is it a one-off or is it something that continues?
Yeah, yeah, so for people who are doing straight IUI, egg freeze, IVF, it's a minimum of one session and then we'll sign a consent with them at the end of that session. If there's anything that they are undecided on or that needs further exploration, of course we would get them back. If you're going down the donor track, then it's a minimum of two appointments for the recipients, and if you're using a known donor, two appointments for the known donor, and that will often include a session together to make sure you're all on the same page. Surrogacy, there's more sessions, so a minimum of three for the each party. But again, it just depends on the circumstances.
So obviously surrogacy would depend. So is that if you're freezing your eggs or is that where it kind of it's a lot more that you need to deal with in that space?
There's a lot more that has to be explored that we're required legally and also it has to go to the patient review panel for approval. So they've got guidelines on what we have to cover. So it generally does take three sessions plus they've got to go and see lawyers and they've also got to have an independent psychological assessment too.
So a lot of our audience would probably go in with a known donor perhaps in the ones that we've spoken to. So is it one or two or three sessions for those before they can kick off and get the party started, as Shirley Bassey says?
Donor, we usually see them separately to begin with.
And so that, so one couple in one room, one in the other?
Like, yeah, different days.
Oh, okay.
Same counsellor, it just depends, whatever works for them. We might do one after the other if they come in together or we try and be as flexible as possible. And then they'll have a second point. We'll send them away to think about some things. There might be some further conversations that they need to have, things they hadn't thought about. They might have slightly different ideas about things. And then we'll get them back again 2 weeks later and for a second appointment, and that's where if all's going well, they'll sign the consent. And that will often involve them having some time together too.
Yeah.
What are there things that are standard that in that, let's just, I guess using an example of a lesbian couple and a known donor is probably a good example. Are there, so the couple comes in first, are there standard things that you would go through with them or is it more about what they want to explore? How does that sort of happen?
So there's, I guess, the legal things that we have to cover and talking to them about what the legislation includes and how that will affect them, you know, the registers, VARTA, storage of embryos. The donor actually has to have a say over what happens to any embryos.
Oh, wow.
There's a whole, a whole lot of things. So there's a whole lot of legislative considerations that we have to talk about, but then we'll talk about that specific arrangement too. So, you know, how they see this arrangement evolving, and making sure that they're on the same page, that they're agreeing about how they want to do, you know, how they want to do it, about, you know, the level of contact, how the donor might be perceived. The other things that we'll talk about is, like, for a same-sex couple, who's going to go first, how you decide who's going to go first. Are you, whoever's going first, are they going to use their own eggs or is the partner going to donate the eggs? So there's a whole lot of things we'll explore with them.
So have people not thought of this when they're coming and seeing you? Do you find that they're kind of like, hey, listen to Family Matters and that sounds like fun. We're going in.
Yeah, well, look, sometimes they haven't. Sometimes they've got an idea about how they're going to do it, but when they have their medical assessments, it becomes clearer that it might be better to do it another way.
Yeah.
Sometimes yeah, they're clear, and then as they talk further, they you know, might think of doing it differently. We have people coming in sometimes with a very clear idea. I'm going to go first, just going to go second, and we're going to use a known donor. And after that first session, they might decide that they want to use a clinic recruited sperm donor, okay. And that you know, they're going to swap who's going first, or.
Because I think it's so important, because having obviously been on the other end of it a lot when things go to the dogs, my sort of perception of those sort of cases that I've been involved in is so much of it comes from not having proper discussions at the start and people having really different expectations about the outcome. So whether that's the donor's understanding of his role in it, or even the couple, them having being on different pages about it. And I think I've had cases at work where people have come to see me about donor agreements, and after, I feel awful, but after having that conversation with me, they've ended up not going ahead with it because in that conversation they went, oh, shit, we're actually not on the same page about some of this stuff ourselves.
Do you think it's a – and I'm a huge fan of Jack Tomlin's she's got a guide, and I'm going to repitch that on our Facebook page, which talks about definitions and language, because what – known donor means to one person and co-parenting means to one person, and donor, they can mean completely different things. And that's why when I first read, I think it's Outspoken Families, forgive me, Jack Tomlin's, if I pronounce that wrong, but it gave a very nice clear definition of what this means so that people could have a conversation. Are you finding that people are, when they're coming in, they've gone donor and one thinks he's like dad moving in on the weekend, but they mean something completely different? Is that
sometimes that can
the
happen.
Language? Yeah.
But sometimes also it can evolve. So they might come in and say, look, we don't really want to have much contact. We're going to just send him cards and maybe meet once or twice a year. And so sometimes then as they talk and we send them away to have conversations and explore how that might look, they come back and go, actually, we're going to have him more actively involved.
And I guess it depends on the relationship too, you know, whether it's a really close friend or someone you found on the internet or whatever it might be.
Hold tight. Family Matters will be back shortly, so don't go far. But if you do miss any of the action, our Family Matters podcast will help you get up to speed. Visit joy.org.au/Family Matters, your lighthearted look at parenthood and rainbow families, sponsored by Berry Street. Berrystreet.org.au.
Yes, we hope you're happy this Thursday night. It is Family Matters. And again, we invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question for that we can cover for Law Week next week, we're just going to call it Law Week.
Sure, why not?
All week. Or if you've got a question for our counsellor, Marianne Tome from Melbourne IVF, please message in on 0427JOY949. Email us on air at joy.org.au. And I just wanted to give the proper name for that brilliant resource by Jack Tomlins. It's called Outspoken Families, a resource kit for rainbow families, which Jack Tomlins published in 2015. And it gives a gorgeous definition to start conversations, I think, to say, well, this is what I think a donor means, and here it is in print.
Yep.
And this is what a known donor is, and here it is in print. And if you've got any questions as to what a co-parent is, look, let's read it together and figure it out. So thank you, Jax.
Conversations are so important, I think, in these things. You know, as I say this to clients who come to see me, you've got the luxury that drunk people that have sex don't have.
In the back of a Barina.
In the back of a Barina with a Bacardi bracer. But you've got the time and you can have the conversation, and you've got, you know, maybe luxury is not the word, because there's a lot of things about that are terribly difficult, but you can have the conversation and understand where everyone's coming from. But what I was interested to ask Marianne, and again, this is something I've kind of got out of seeing the bad end of it, there's often not just the donor and the mum, shall we say, involved. There's often other family members, other partners, all sorts of things. How does that play into the counselling process, and what do you see with that?
Sometimes parties will come in really prepared. So they've spoken to their families, the donor's spoken to their family, the recipient couple have spoken to their family, and everyone's on board and they come in really prepared for the counselling. Other times the donor won't have spoken to his family about it. Sometimes they've got a partner they haven't spoken to partner about, and they see it as a very personal and individual thing that they're doing. But then what we'll do in counselling is really get them to think about that wider circle of family, and, you know, we'll ask them questions in regards to what, you know, how might their parents, what might they think about there being children that are genetically their grandchildren that they may never meet or get to have a relationship with. And sometimes that stops the donors in their tracks because they hadn't really thought about that and what it might be like. So we really will work with them and encourage them to just talk to their family. And the other thing is often when they speak to their parents, they're surprised at their response and they often have some really good questions or, you know, ideas or thoughts that actually enhance the donor, and especially with our clinic recruited sperm donors. Like when we talk to them about going to talk to someone and bouncing some ideas off them, they often come back with a sort of a fuller picture or a better sense of what this might be like and what the long-term implications might be like.
Ashley, that's an interesting question. So your clinic recruited sperm donors, have I got the words right?
Yep.
So they're guys that just come along and say, I want to donate some sperm.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to go through the counselling process as well.
Yes, they do.
Wow. Okay. Oh. And is that about them knowing where they're stuff might end up, or what's the counselling around that?
Absolutely, because when you're a donor, if we see that you're a donor for life, pretty much, because
you are now.
Absolutely. So it might be, you know, I'll just do this. It sounds good. I've heard it on the radio, or I've just had a pop up, you know, ad on my Facebook page, and I'll do it. But nowadays, with the legislation and with the move where recipients and the donor conceived children. The reality is they will most likely want to contact their donor and have some level of contact or relationship with them. So we need to prepare these donors for the implications of that, for the reality of that, get them to think about, you know, what might that be like in 18 years' time, or even nowadays it's actually a lot quicker. Recipients are actually contacting or trying to have some level of contact or communication with their donors much earlier these days.
So that's what we would call the unknown donor in that scenario.
Because I guess in the olden days, not that long ago, but, you know, guys would just go, oh, that seems like the right thing to do. Here's my stuff and I'll go off into the distance and you never see me again. Whereas now it's a much more, I guess, involved, intense process when you think, oh, God, there's a kid that's probably going to come and find me at some point.
It could be plural. So it can be used. Is this one of the questions they are asked to think about?
Yeah.
It could be more than one child to more than one family.
Because in Victoria, donors can donate up to 10, up to 10 women. But that includes any of their own partners or ex-partners. Interestingly, with the Victorian legislation, same-sex couples are counted as two women, even though they're forming the one family. So if you have two women in a relationship who want to use the same donor, we have to, and this is a bit technical, but we have to save two allocations for
them.
So
he's up to nine and they can't use him.
We allow them to hold an allocation so that they can have their donor, that they can use the same donor for their children.
Have you observed there being a drop off in men donating because of the really?
No, in fact, we actually, whenever there's publicity about the changing legislation, the pre-88, pre-98 stuff, we end up getting an increase in donors contacting us interested. Yeah,
but we were having a funny question because that was one of the things we talked about off air, Marianne, but you were then talking about the old age problem of supply and demand, which comes into the equation of.
Yes, yeah.
So more donors, but still not enough for the people wanting the service.
We have the same level of donors, but we have since 2010, where you don't have to be infertile to use a donor, we've got obviously a dramatic increase in the number of women that are accessing our service. So, yeah, it's that old supply and demand issue.
Maybe we do a donathon.
A donathon?
Here on Family Matters.
Could you please? Oh, that'd be great.
Although we had someone on our show who was a donor and he was very upset about the lack of gay porn in some of the clinics. So we might have to get onto that. I think we did ask if anyone could send some in.
Well, you get
to
us some more donors and we'll get you better gay porn.
Okay.
Maybe we help with the gay porn selection.
I think that's a fair deal.
Lads.
That would be good, actually.
And I've actually heard that from more than one guy who said that, you know, lots of boobs in there, but not enough gay porn for what they need to get done.
Lots of 70s.
Yeah.
Playboy-esque.
I'd actually like to go and have a look just for my own interest, but nonetheless.
We can consult.
Back on topic. Sorry. Welcome to Family Matters, Marianne. Sorry. This is how this show usually descends. What's the sort of timeline we're talking? So let's just say Gina and I are a couple. Wouldn't that be nice? And we decide we want to have a baby and we've got a friend of ours, let's call him Dave, and he's going to give us the sperm.
Before he goes to Paris.
That's right. Yes. So we go to the clinic.
That is so true. That always happens.
Just drop it off before I'm out. How long is the process that we're looking at to start? No, I'm not being very articulate today, but
Beck to go
in terms of the counselling, yeah, those sorts of things, before we started trying, how long would that take?
Okay, so once you book in for your counselling, so you've obviously you're going to need to go and see a specialist and make, mm-hmm, sure that everything's okay and that you you know, work out what sort of treatment that you want. Your donor will also then go through tests and has to fill out a genetic health questionnaire and all that sort of thing. But you have your first counselling session and then you have your second counselling session 2 weeks later.
Okay.
The donor then will provide his donations.
Yep.
In the poorly resourced.
Yes.
Yeah.
If anyone's got any spare gay porn at home, send it in.
Yeah. And then we quarantine the sperm for 3 months. And then we, once that's done and cleared and the donor has his post-quarantine tests, you can pretty much start treatment.
Does that seem too long for people? When people come to see you, do they expect it to happen tomorrow?
You know, I think people often want to rush it and they want to make decisions that are the quickest and the best decisions for now. And then part of the counselling is to get them to think about what are the best decisions for the long term, you know, for that child that hopefully will eventually be born.
Because I guess that's right. It's different to have the discussion in the hypothetical rather than when there's an actual child there.
And once they get into it, though, once they get the start counselling, usually the feedback we get is that they've found it really helpful. And
yeah.
Often it really goes quickly too.
I've got a question about gold stars, but, you know, waiting 3 months for quarantine, I'm just going to make you wait about 30 seconds.
The kids are all right. As for our presenters, Family Matters, Joy 94.9.
We are supported, well, by our community. And we actually got a bit of a supporter coming to the studio then, offering to offer up his stuff.
Stuff. If you're listening, everyone, come on down. Donate your stuff. Now, maybe not tonight. Marianne can't take it back to work with her tomorrow. That would be unhygienic. But speaking of that, Marianne, what's the usual profile of a donor? Are they mostly gay, mostly straight, old, young? What's the...
So probably the main mix are gay men and single men. And then we get also our heterosexual men. I think, you know, we get a lot of gay men because it's on their radar much more than your average male. So, and they're good donors too.
And what are usually the reasonings that the donors have? Why are those blokes coming in to do that?
Oh, varied. Sometimes they've been aware of, for some of our heterosexual donors, they've gone through, their partners may have had trouble conceiving or a sister or somebody. Actually, that's for all our donors. That sometimes it is that they've known somebody
or
been in a situation.
Yeah.
Sometimes someone's asked them to be a donor and that hasn't necessarily gone through. So then they've thought, oh, you know what, I'm still interested in doing this. Sometimes they've realised that they're probably not going to have children or have made a decision not to have children. So they think that this is not a way of having children. They're not, that's probably, if they said that to us, we probably wouldn't accept them. But it's just, you know, well, I can help some other people to have children and it'll be interesting to meet these people in the future. And
we had a known sperm donor, Daniel Nags. We renamed him on the night, Milkman Nags. And what he donated to a couple, and he was a known donor in that scenario, so he obviously would have gone through the counselling. But what he did mention about the counselling that he and the couple were not aware of is he had just started dating somebody and apparently needed to take this new we're talking second date kind of boyfriend, into the counselling session. Is that... Say David is, you know, Beck and I are like, yep, David, here's our donor. Before he goes off to France, he's just started this little online relationship with a Frenchman that's about, you know, to hook up. Does this Frenchman also need to be part of this counselling?
No, not technically. So in the legislation doesn't require partners to consent. But they used to have to under the old legislation. And we think that's really important because this is a decision that will affect your partner too.
Yeah.
And under the NHMRC guidelines, which are the Australian guidelines that cover us all, partners are required to be involved in the counselling. So we do have to have the partners involved in the counselling. But what is a partner?
Yeah.
So under the ART Act, it's someone that you're living with in a bona fide domestic relationship or married to. So they have to come in. That partner has to participate in the counselling. But if you're not living together, if it's a new relationship or short term, then
grinder,
we will
Snapchat,
talk to you. We'll talk to you about that. But generally, we say that if this is someone that you're planning a long term future with, it's important. It's important to include them in this and make the decision together. You know, if you go off and do this on your own in the early stages of a relationship and you don't talk to them about it or tell them about that, that can have implications for this relationship that may be a very important one to you in the future.
Is your experience that most people these days are going with known or unknown donors?
Most with clinic recruited sperm donors.
And is that something they talk about in counselling, why that is?
It's easier.
Yep.
Because you don't have to go and find someone. You don't have to have those awkward conversations. Some, they might have someone in mind, but they just go, oh, I just don't know if I want to have someone that close to us. What am I in for our relationship? But, you know, usually it is often because they want that separation. They want to be in control of if and when the child has contact with the donor and how that might look. So I think they rather start from that separation and then decide as things evolve whether they want to include that donor or have contact of some sort. But, you know, the known arrangements that we see generally work really well. As long as they really talk about, have really honest conversations, don't just say yes to get along or to make sure, you know, because you're worried if you say no to something or question something that might mean the relationship or the arrangement falls down.
Yeah.
What are the sort of things that someone was about to embark on this process, before they even came to the counselling and saw you, what are some of the things that they should have thought about or should be thinking about or you're going to bring up in counselling and they shouldn't be shocked about?
Okay, so have they decided which way they're going, clinic recruited or?
They haven't decided, no.
Okay, so we would get if the same-sex couple came in, for example, we would get them to talk, we want them to have talked about what are their expectations of a donor? Do they want someone that is going to have a relationship with the child? Do they want someone that they're going to regularly see? Do they want someone who's more at arm's length? And making sure they're on the same page, because sometimes one partner will go along with the other, even though they might have someone that they, you know, sometimes one of them's got a friend that they would really like to have as a donor, but the other partner isn't so keen, so they just push that to the side and go, okay, we'll go clinic recruited sperm donor. But when we're talking with them, it comes out that this would be really important to her to have someone involved that she knows and trusts and has had a long-term relationship with or friendship with. So, you know, it is really important to really not just go, yep, that's what we'll do, but have a really good conversation about what is the best for us. Write it down. Write the pros and cons. Think about the future and what it might look like if you're using a clinic-recruited sperm donor that you don't know or if you're using one of your best friends that you've known since primary school.
Sounds like there's a very important checklist of questions that you guys – do you have like a carbon copy checklist that we can send out to our audience? Like, is there a checklist or is it really a counsellor going, look, I've been doing this for 20 years and I can see – and there isn't a checklist of questions that the counsellor's just saying, so tell me, how does this make you feel, that sort of approach? Mm. Or is there actually, okay, today I've got someone who's not sure if they're going this – is there a checklist of things that – people,
like, on a Melbourne IVF website, we do have our booklet, and in that it does have questions to ask. We do have some lists of questions and things that we get people to talk about. VARTA on their website also do that. Is a great resource for people who are thinking about using a donor or thinking about being a donor, and they do have that sort of thing. And Rainbow Families too, did I say that?
Yeah,
they also have some great, and really we don't want to reinvent the wheel. They have so much good stuff on their website about what you need to think about and talk about when considering using a donor.
Because it sounds like they're the conversations people should really be having, because yes, if people are doing this at home, definitely be having these conversations. But if you're going to go in the process, there's already time that you're going to be waiting from, like, you might as well, like, just start having conversation. Do you reckon people are afraid to find out what people really think?
Yeah.
Is that the thing? Is it the fear of just they might say no or?
Yeah, I think having a child and creating a family and also such a person is such an important thing. And there's so many more factors you have to consider. As you said, this is not just about having sex. You really have to plan this. And I think there's that fear that if we don't agree and if we don't seem to be on the same page at every step, that this might just get too hard and we might just not be able to go further with it. Or if we've got a donor that we want to use, if the donor too, if we don't, if we put your hand up and say, this is not exactly how I want to do it, I don't feel comfortable, would you consider if I had more involvement with the child? There can be that fear that you're going to offend or it's not going to go, you know, it's not going to proceed. Mm. So people can be very careful, and that's where the counselling is really important, to make sure they're having, we'll ask the hard questions.
Yeah.
We'll put them to you. We'll, you know,
can I ask, I can't believe we're almost out of an hour. So I've got two that I really want to ask, but one is, okay, so you've been having these gorgeous conversations with your known or known donor or co-parent or whatever. So the lesbian couple goes into room A and they have this conversation. They're like, we're so aligned. Mm-hmm. We're just soulmates and we're all cool with this. And then the boys go into the other room and go, we're so aligned. We all, and the counselor comes out going, oh my God, they are completely the opposite. Does anyone go, no gold star for you, you two actually need to sit down and have a conversation? Is there like a almost forced group counselling session?
Absolutely,
in that
scenario? Absolutely, yeah. We legislatively we have to, because we have to decide it. We have to say that all the implications have been explored and that they understand the implications. Now, if you're on two different pages, there's, you know, going to be the implication. So that's when we'll get them in together and have a conversation. Say, okay, you're on different pages here. These are some of the things that you need to talk about, and get them to have those conversations and get them to go away and have further conversation about it.
If they're all aligned, do they get a gold star?
Big tick.
if they're not, can you, as the counsellor, say these people shouldn't be going through the process, or do people have the right to go through the process no matter whether it's a bad idea?
Normally what we will do is talk to them and have say, we've really got concerns. You're not on the same page here. This is this is a recipe for disaster unless you try and work this out. Or we'd say it probably a little bit different to that. But often they see it. Like often it's not, we just have to help assist those conversations, and they work out for themselves, you know what, this isn't going to work. We're not going to find common ground here, and then they'll make the decision themselves. And when I said about the tick, I was thinking sometimes when everyone's in alignment and agreement and everything's all rosy and rainbows and unicorns, it's not necessarily a big tick, because sometimes you get the sense of they're just telling us what they think we want to hear.
Mm.
We would much rather people be having really honest conversations and even struggling with some of it and having to tease some of that out.
Now, I'm actually going to take us to a break early, because I've got an important question about where it's, you know, everyone signed the consent form. They've got a tick because they were real. They were real in these conversations. But I'd like to know, I've seen on the website the counselling it doesn't just stop there when you get that tick and sign that consent form. So we'll be back in just a sec.
The life issues that, well, matter. Family Matters on Joy 94.9.
You are listening to Family Matters on Joy 94.9, and Gina and I have had the most amazing conversation with Marianne, and we've got a couple more questions we want to sneak in, but we had a message, and I'm interested to hear your take on this, Marianne. It's from Daniel, and thank you for listening, Daniel, but he says, love the theme of this week's show, guys, driving home from law class. Aww. But I'll never approve of compulsory counselling for people undertaking IVF until all would-be parents are required to undergo counselling. The status quo discriminates against gay couples.
What do you think, Marianne?
Mm, yeah, I get what he's saying. We often hear this argument that, you know, if you don't need IVF, you can just go out and have a baby and no one's asking you, you know, to think about it and talk about all this stuff. But as we said at the start of the show, all people undergoing IVF have to have counselling.
Straight, gay or whatever.
Yep. Exactly. And yes, you know, you can't counsel everybody who's out there not doing IVF before they have a child. You'd be in the back of the wagon.
In the back of the barina, that's right.
Handing out business cards. Hello, yeah. I'm a family lawyer.
Have you talked about
that? Yes, that's right. It's interesting though, isn't it? I mean, you know, that's the whole process is so different to people that don't go through assisted technology, I guess. Mm.
One thing I wanted to touch on, we were just saying before our sponsors, was once a consent form is signed, does your role as a counsellor for people going through this therapy, you know, or this clinical process, stop there? Is that our relationship done and dusted with you?
No. Formally it does. There's nothing else that they have to attend, but we have counselling available at any stage throughout treatment and post-treatment too. And Melbourne IVF, we think that is something that's really important to support people through that treatment. And one thing we haven't touched on is often when same-sex couples or single women are coming for treatment, they think it's because they need the sperm. Mm. And sometimes, unfortunately, they find out that they actually have fertility issues too. Okay. And that can be a real blow when you realise that this is not going to be as easy as you thought.
So that counselling's there to...
Yep.
So right. Is that most of the counselling you're seeing, women that have had fertility issues? And is it just for the couples? Is it for donors as well to go, look at...
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Sometimes they, you know, they might want to come through and talk about it, you know, about...
miscarriage or those, yeah.
You know, with the egg donors, sometimes they, you know, they feel a bit distanced from it, but when the woman might have a miscarriage, they really feel that because they've been part of it too. So any donors, anyone who's going through treatment can have supportive counselling.
So say an unknown donor has been contacted by somebody who they thought they'd be anonymous, can they come back and see you, or would they really have to seek another counsellor out of that? Because I donated 10 years ago and my membership's run out. Or can they come in and see you in that space?
Yeah, they can. With our, these are our clinical recruited donors. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they. We often, you know, we do get calls from them saying, "Look, I've been thinking about now that I might, you know, want to see if there's any, you know, want to make might make contact, mm-hmm. or I've been wondering about the outcome." We'll always tell donors they can actually be told the outcome of the arrangements. You know, how many families have been created, the sex and age of the children, so that they get a sense of, well, this is the outcome of my donation, and this is what I can expect in the future.
Where did the hour go?
I have no idea. You'll have to come back, Marianne.
I just think you're going to have to come back and join us. Is there anything in the last minute that we can
literally?
What do you reckon, Beck? I don't know.
Can
I say, in Melbourne RVF, we do need donors.
Yes.
Well, we literally have one coming in off the studio a moment ago.
Come in.
Should we do a donathon?
If someone does want to donate, is it as simple as calling the clinic?
It is, absolutely. And if you Google us, the number and our email address and all that will come up. You can even go to our website and send us a message and someone will be in touch with you tomorrow.
Fabulous. So it's pretty simple.
And if you'd like to also donate porn as well for
yes,
the donors.
Yes, do that, because we know that's very important.
Send it into Joy FM first.
Yeah, we'll get these boys to check it out for you.
We'll veto anything that's inappropriate.
Speaking
we'll
of those
sure.
boys out there.
We've got the bears.
Woof, great show, Gina, and I bet the woods will be too. What did you give me for that one, Dean?
I'll give you a donation. I was going to give you a 5 out of 10, but maybe I'll just give you a 5. I don't know.
Oh, well, happy either way.
Woof girl.
Woof girl.
That was an interesting topic, guys.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Yeah. If there's any bears that want to donate, Melbourne IVF.
There you go.
Good bear sperm.
Good night.
Good night. Thank
Family Matters, brought to you by Joy Sponsor, Nichols Family Lawyers. Family law advice for the LGBTI community you can trust. Nicholslaw.com.au.
You've been listening to Joy 94.9's Family Matters podcast, your light-hearted look at parenthood and rainbow families, sponsored by Berry Street. Did you know that Berry Street seeks members of our LGBTI communities to become foster carers? Not only do they have a proud tradition of training and embracing LGBTIQ carers, they officially support marriage equality. Learn more now at berrystreet.org.au, a proud Joy sponsor for over 5 years.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.